Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Our first guest today for the first 2 hours is James Perloff. His recent book is 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, Solving Political, Cultural, and Spiritual Riddles, Past and Present. And we're talking about some of the firebombing. And we mentioned Dresden and then and Nagasaki, and when you look at Tokyo and the houses in Japan, they weren't made the way that houses in America were made, and it was just plain slaughter. It was an inferno, and the same with Germany. They decided to firebomb all of these cities, beginning with cities that had a population of 50,000 and above. After they got done doing that, then they went to the cities or towns, communities with less than 50,000. They weren't out really to just destroy Hitler. They were out to destroy every German that they possibly could, and the pets and the zoo animals and everything else. They just wanted to wipe Germany off the face of the earth.
But if you watch your Memorial Day movies, they're always bombing Germany just to get the war munitions factories.
You're right.
But, you know, I think talking about Dresden, it's a pretty good segue to the sixth chapter of my book, which we can cover pretty briefly, which is on Nagasaki. And here again, I'm indebted to another researcher, in this case, David J. Dionisi, who wrote a book called Atomic Bomb Secrets, which really opened my eyes to what had happened with atomic bombings. You know, I already knew, Deanna, before I read his book, that Japan had sued us for peace prior to the dropping of the atomic bombs.
Right.
And they sued us for peace on the very terms we accepted. You know, America had demanded unconditional surrender of Japan. And Japan responded saying that we'll accept unconditional surrender. You can occupy our country, whatever you want. We want one condition. We want to keep our emperor. Well, guess what? We accepted that condition in the end anyway. So there goes your explanation, any possible pretext for dropping the atomic bombs. Dionisi makes it very clear why they bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Well, as an aside, Hiroshima was the number one place for Christian missionary activity in Japan. But Nagasaki was the real target that they were after. Nagasaki was called the Japanese Vatican. It was home to 50,000 Christians. It was the Christian center of Japan. And the powers that be, the Satanists, knew that when the war was over, they're going to force the emperor to renounce his divinity. They did not want Christianity to fill that void. And they were quite keen to destroy the Christian presence in Japan. That's why these two cities were selected for this, again, this complete immolation. And here's something that's really stunning. Deanna, ground zero for the Nagasaki bomb, the place it was dropped directly over was Urakami Cathedral, which was the largest church in the entire Far East. That was selected, or perhaps they'll say it was just accidental, but that was where they dropped the bomb directly, was over the largest Christian church in Asia. And you were talking about payback with Dresden for that anti-Zionist Congress that they held in the 1880s. I should mention that Harry Truman, who authorized this, was a 33rd degree Freemason. He did quite a few other bad things, which we can get into. But Nagasaki had expelled the Freemasons in 1926. And following that, Japan itself expelled all Freemasons. So there's a lot of payback involved here. But these cities were targeted completely unnecessarily to win the war. To destroy the Christian presence in Japan, and to do it in a style that would certainly be pleasing to Satan, which is the complete again, the immolation or Holocaust, real Holocaust of these Christian populations. So that's what that's about, and that's what Chapter 6 is about. And again, I'm indebted to David J. DeNisi for the deep research he did on this.
Right. And when you read about the devastation and the children and the things that occurred, and look at the photos, there was no reason. And as you said, Japan had agreed to surrender twice, and they talked to other people and said, "Hey, we give up." And but since the United States already had these bombs, I guess they just didn't want them to go to waste. So I guess they just figured, well, let's go and slaughter all, burn all these people up, just because we can.
Yeah, the pretexts evaporate very, very quickly. If anybody who scrutinizes the pretexts just don't hold up at all. So that's Nagasaki, and I don't know if there's another chapter that within the book that caught your attention at all. I don't know if you had time to.
We've talked about Pearl Harbor, of course.
Right.
Roosevelt's 9/11. That's been talked about quite a bit. But let's talk about how they propagandized with early television. And we often think that television was created so that, well, one has to wonder why it was created. And you talk about how TV went from having certain programming, and I use that word intentionally, to being different than it was originally designed, or that people thought that it was originally designed. And you talk in Chapter 8, the real reason there was a golden age of television, and one must also, let's backtrack here, Chapter 7. Let's see.
The one in 1948, the Nakba, Harry Truman,
yeah,
and the mystery of the best picture Oscar.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we go into those two? Regarding the golden age of television, you know, I mentioned in the chapter that, you know, I was born in 51, and we got our first TV set in 55 or 56. But I only saw the golden age in terms of kiddie shows, the children's shows at that time. And one day in the 1970s, my sister and I sat down, and for some reason, one of the stations decided to replay. It was one of those old dramas like Playhouse 90, where they had a different drama every weekend. We're stunned as we watched one of the best acted dramas we'd ever seen. And we said, why don't they make television like this anymore? You know, this is really good. And but it wasn't just that. It was TV back then was very moral. And there's one reason why people look at it nostalgically. You know, there was no cursing. There was no sex. There was no graphic violence, and every show, you know, if you watched Leave It to Beaver, even The Honeymooners, every show, there was always a moral lesson. Amidst the entertainment, at the end, you know, the Beaver always had to, or his brother Wally always had to make a right or wrong decision, and it was teaching your kids good lessons in the 50s. Honestly, I actually think that television was a positive thing back then. But, you know, this is the old trick of putting cheese in the trap for the mouse to go in. What happened was they knew that to get these strange boxes into people's homes, they had to make it as appealing as possible to a Christian moral America, which it was back in those days. It wasn't just the golden age of television. It was a golden age for America, I believe, mm-hmm. back in the 50s. And, you know, one thing that really amazed me, Dean, as I started to investigate this more deeply, was how openly Christian a lot of the content was, especially in the early 50s. Now, I'll give you some examples. You know how pop music used to get introduced on TV sometimes, you know, a song would make its debut. The very first pop music song to debut on television was I Believe by Frankie Lane. You know, I Believe. And it was all about belief in God. And it hit number two on the pop charts, the Billboard charts. But it was introduced on television. And my wife asked me a couple of years ago, you know, what would you like for Christmas? And I said, well, why don't you get me some of the, they've got this collection of Studio One dramas, and Studio One is this weekly drama series that began in 1948. I said, I'd never seen that before. Why don't you get me that? I suppose you want it at the end because they had the first ever dramatization of Orwell's 1984, and I kind of wanted to watch that. But I was amazed at how Christian some of the content was. You know, there's one which episode where this guy is given, his father or the family is given up on God. At the end of the program, though, the church bells are ringing, the family is going off to church. And 2 years ago, Turner Classic Movies, they were showing episodes of James Dean, you know, James Dean, the famous young actor who died after three movies. Well, he made a lot of TV shows in the early 50s, and they had one on Turner Classic Movies, which I since downloaded. It's called Harvest. It was an episode of Robert Montgomery Presents. And the thing was so Christian. James Dean plays a farm boy, and when his father, grandfather dies, they play the Lord's Prayer song version. And at the end, the father gives, of the whole program, the father gives this heartfelt Christian prayer. And I looked at it, I said, you know what they're doing? They're convincing the Christian Americans that TV is a Christian medium. And if you get this, it's going to teach your kids to pray. It's going to teach them the difference between right and wrong. Remember Superman? That show always began with teaching children that Superman fights for truth and justice in the American
way.
You know? Yeah, it was all moral content. But as soon as TV reached saturation point, which was about 1963, they had over 90% of all homes with TVs. And they knew that there was going to be a max point. But that's when they began to ask, that's when they began to change the content. They took off Leave It to Beaver. They stopped showing reruns of Father Knows Best on network television. All of a sudden you had My Favorite Martian, which honestly I believe that we call aliens are demonic, but it was all introduced in a very cute way. You know, Bewitched was a very cute witch, and I Dream of Jeannie was very cute magic. They boiled the frog. They just gradually introduced this change of content. And just to back this up, I want to quote Anton LaVey, who was the founder of the Church of Satan. You know, he was a Satanist. And here's what he wrote in his book, The Devil's Notebook, published in 1992, quote, TV's infiltration has been so gradual, so complete, that no one even noticed. People don't need to go to church anymore to get their morality plays on television. What began modestly as rabbit ears on tops of family TV sets are now satellite dishes and antennas pridefully dominating the skyline, replacing crosses on tops of churches, end quote. Anton LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan. Well, that was the golden age of television. I think it was very positive on those days. I get misty-eyed when I think of some of those old shows, I Love Lucy, The Honeymooners. You know, it was a great era. It was all moral, you know. But
Love Lucy and Desi never even slept in the same bed for pizza.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Now you have sex scenes.
Yeah, right, and without being married. And now they have a show called Lucifer, which is all about Lucifer being the good guy, you know, and helping the LAPD solve crimes. And I don't watch the Super Bowl halftime shows, but I know that Madonna dressed up as Baphomet for one, and that Katy Perry apparently appearing to be the beast, writing the beast of the of Babylon, that's described in the book of Revelation. You know, all this weird satanic Freemasonic stuff, imagery at the Super Bowl halftime shows, and television itself is totally in the sewer, totally politically correct, open Satanism that you never would have been imaginable back in the 50s. But there was a golden age of television, what I discovered, for a reason. It was deliberately done. It wasn't because the studio heads were moral. It was because they knew that to get convince people to buy these expensive sets, they had to make it really good.
Right. I remember we used to go across the street to, we lived across the street and down half a block from my grandmother's house, and she bought a television. And so we used to go over there and watch I Love Lucy, and followed by December Bride. And it was a wonderful thing. And then we got a television set. And by the time I had my children, I thought, oh, this is really different. Mm-hmm. And so my husband and I decided that we would get rid of the TV, because it was a bad influence, and a lot of parents use TV to babysit their children too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they don't. And so we got rid of the television, and we did things with our children, took them to the library, and well, we did a lot of wonderful things. But the very first 2 to 3 weeks was, oh my gosh, it was very challenging, because we don't realize, parents don't realize how much they do depend on TV to babysit the children. And now, of course, it's gone from TV to video games and mm-hmm. other electronic gadgets that they can divert their children from. And children now are not learning proper language, proper English. It has really become, it's pretty bad. People don't know, do not know how to have a discussion with each other. They don't know how to write. They don't know how to do cursive. It has coincided, the advent of all this technology has coincided with a deliberate dumbing down in the government schools, where mm-hmm. people are not learning how to think, and they're given, they're not even teaching cursive in the schools anymore, from what I understand. How could they not teach cursive?
Right, and I even hear that now it's getting rare for children to read complete books. They might read an excerpt from a book, but they're usually not assigned to read a full book as we were before. So their reading skills, it's really becoming Orwellian. It's been doing so all along, but it's getting pretty close to what Orwell described in 1984 with Newspeak and
right.
A completely hypnotized population.
Right. Propagandized. And so we go back to the question, or to the situation that we talked about earlier. How can all these people go off to war and kill people? Well, it's because they've been programmed to do these things. Programmed in part via TV and via their government schools. It's what they learn. And they see warfare as being something that that is good, and when it's really just mass slaughter of foreign populations.
Yes, there's a quote. I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was the last living American veteran of World War One, and he said that war is nothing but he said either organized slaughter or organized murder. I think he said organized murder is about how he put it. Mass murder on an organized scale. So I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he was saying exactly what you're saying. And, you know, TV did play a big role in that, in Hollywood, and that there'd be so many killings, and it just one killing person being killed after another, and it's like no big deal for someone to die.
And movies about warfare, the glorification of warfare, mm-hmm. has been in the movies and on television.
Yeah, and you know, there can be a good war if you're really being threatened, if your national your nation is truly being threatened with invasion legitimately, then self-defense is absolutely your prerogative. But unfortunately, in the case of the United States, we have fought interventionist wars time and time again, and since we normally weren't being threatened with invasion, although sometimes it would conjure up images of that, you know, the Huns crossing the ocean, and even right. though they didn't have any aircraft carriers for air support, somehow they're going to invade us, you know. All of our wars, they've definitely come up with things like freedom and democracy, make the world safer democracy, and you still hear that now. I've heard preachers from the pulpit saying that our wars are to defend our liberties, and like, what? How are we defending our liberty? You know, there wasn't one Afghani amongst the 19 alleged hijackers, 15 versus Saudi Arabia, and we're doing arms deals with them worth, you know, billions and billions of dollars. It's not about freedom and democracy, but people have just been so programmed, as you put it before.
Right. And the sports, as you indicated, have been not only militarized, in the fact they have uniforms and they use military type practices, Pledge of Allegiance before the game, and also the halftime programs where they promote Satanism. Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. And there's so many people who are big sports fans. And I think it was Pat Tillotson was going to come back and spill the beans and was assassinated before he got back so that he could tell what was actually going on, and in Iraq. Anyway, we will be right back, or I guess it was Afghanistan he went to. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
All right. We are back with our first guest today, James Perloff. And we're talking about, and I mentioned Pat Tillman. I think I said Tillotson, but Pat Tillman was assassinated before by friendly gunfire because he was going to come back and spill the beans about what was going on in Afghanistan. But you mentioned, well, we were talking about 1948 and Harry Truman and the mystery of the Best Picture Oscar. Do you want to cover that?
Yeah, that's a one again. We did this book. Is aimed at resolving a few mysteries. This was a personal one for me. You know, in the late 60s, we were talking about television a few moments ago. Right. My father and I were watching TV, and the TV station announced that this coming Friday, we're going to show the winner of the Best Picture Oscar for 1947, Gentleman's Agreement. And my father and I thought, oh boy, you know, Best Pictures will be something like Lawrence of Arabia, Bridge on the River Kwai, On the Waterfront. This is going to be a great entertainment, right? So, mm-hmm. The day rolls around, and part of the problem was perhaps that we set our expectations too high. But the movie was an utter flop. I mean, it was totally boring. gentleman's agreement is nothing but a long sermon on the woe of American anti-Semitism. And Gregory Peck plays a magazine writer, and he's hired to write a series on anti-Semitism, but since he's not Jewish, he assumes a Jewish identity. And the entire film basically consists of him encountering everybody he encounters somehow as an anti-Semite. And his girlfriend, his secretary, his janitor, his doctor, they all make some very slight, very subtle anti-Semitic remark. And then Gregory Peck scolds them. And that's basically the whole movie. You know, I mean, it's just my father and I kept waiting. Is this going to get interesting at some point? Now, I just got to mention something here, Deanna, which is that my father was Jewish. All right. And I'm half Jewish. And so it wasn't like we had anything against a message against bigotry. It's just that we were amazed that such a boring film with such a dull plot, you know, there was no action in this movie. There was no humor in it. And the romance between Gregory Peck and Dorothy McGuire is simply tacked on for the sake of having a romance. It did nothing to it. Even Gregory Peck said afterwards, now, there was no magic or spark in that relationship, you know. So we're mystified. How did this loser of a movie, no matter how much they tried to dignify it with getting an actor like Gregory Peck or a director like Elia Kazan, how did it get the best picture? It was a mystery to us. So now it's not a mystery, Deanna. You know, that Best Picture Oscar was awarded on March the 20th, 1948. You know what happened less than 2 months later, May the 11th, 1948? The State of Israel was proclaimed. And 11 minutes after it was proclaimed, Harry Truman recognized it against the advice of many advisors. And according to John F. Kennedy, the reason he recognized it so quickly is because he was given a $2 million bribe. And that bribe came from none other than Abraham Feinberg, the founder of AIPAC, which just how long right. The influence is, you know. The reason that dull movie was given the Best Picture Oscar was its message was that any criticism of Jews or Zionism, no matter how subtle, must be stamped out. That was and at the end of the movie, you know, Dorothy McGuire cannot win Gregory Peck until she pledges to fight anti-Semitism at the end of the movie. You know, then she wins him over. You know, and it's like, okay, I get it now. They wanted to squelch any criticism of Truman's recognition of Israel, which has led to the USS Liberty, 9/11, and countless other tragedies. And I know we're probably hitting up to a break, but I wanted to contrast that. Because 1948 was the year of the Nakba. That's when dozens of massacres were committed by the Zionists of Palestinians in their villages, and 750,000 Palestinians were driven from their homes and forced to live in tents. That was the tragedy of 1948, not what the movie was saying, which is the big tragedy is that Gregory Peck, because it's a Jewish name, can't get the best reservations at a first-class hotel in the United States. I mean, the contrast of tragedy was so great and so deep, yet all the attention and all the accolades went to Gentleman's Agreement.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And as you said, well, they took over 500 Palestinian towns. And it says, they said that they mentioned the catchphrase, a land without a people for a people without a land. And that, they made it seem like that the land of Palestine was just open, vacant, and gosh, why not just let people settle and it was of course right after World War II, and all the propaganda that came out after World War II about what supposedly happened and perpetuated by the Germans, which actually didn't happen. And yes, what about the Palestinians? What about all the people, the slaughter of the Palestinians, and the land that was taken from them, their homes, their orchards, their vineyards, everything? And it is kind of an amazing thing that this movie was made and got this award. All righty, we will be right back. Thank you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great, thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Reaching for a dream of peace to break the madness.
All righty, we are back. And this is Deanna. And you talk about if Americans knew, and I think that people should look at that website and read material found there. But they talk about the massacres. You have a photo of the victims of the infamous diary. How do you pronounce that?
I think it may be Dera Yassin.
Dera Yassin massacre of April 9th, 1948, which I'm sure they didn't put on TV. And it just makes me sick. And Golda Meir said that Palestinians did not exist. And I guess now they pretty much don't. The only ones that are still there are, well, they have no resources. They've been locked out of their jobs. There's a wall that's been created to keep them from traveling outside of a specific, very small area. If you look at a map of that land in 1948 and a map of that land now, you'll see that the entire country that used to belong to Palestine is now occupied. And pretty sad to read about this.
Yeah, it's theft of land is what's gone on. It's gone on to this very day. And, you know, if you're God's chosen people, you're not supposed to be violating his commandments. Thou shalt not steal, right? The Christians were conned, of course, into accepting all of this by the Scofield Reference Bible, which is a subject of the 10th chapter of the book. We don't need to get into it now, but it's called The Abomination of Christian Zionism. And it's a complete history of that movement, going back to, you know, Herzl and his congresses and Scofield's personal history and how that Bible was issued the same year as the Balfour Declaration to convince the Christian world that God wanted the Jews to come back and retake the land. Because according to Scofield, in his commentary, in his reference Bible, he said God gave them an unconditional promise to the land of Palestine. There were no conditions. All you got to do is read Deuteronomy 28 or many other chapters in the Bible, and you know that God's promises to the Israelites, the ancient Hebrews, were always conditional on their behavior and on their obedience. In fact, they weren't even allowed to enter the promised land, you might recall, when Moses brought the Hebrews out of Egypt because they weren't obedient to the command. They were forced to march in the wilderness for 40 years. And if people think that the Hebrews of today, if we can even call them that, if the Israelites of today are more obedient to God, I want to point out that Tel Aviv has been voted the most gay-friendly city in the world, has an annual gay parade. And according to polls, the Gallup poll, 65% of people in Israel today call themselves either atheist or not religious. So do you think that they're more obedient? This is not God bringing back his people to the land of Israel. It's the Rothschilds doing it. It's the Balfour Declaration. It's the Rothschilds buying up land beginning in, we know, as early as 1829. And the Rothschilds, we know, are also behind communism, the murder of the Tsar, the world government, and all these other bad things. And, you know, unfortunately, many people have a blind eye to Zionism and the harm it's caused. Again, without it, you'd have no 9/11 and no Middle East wars today.
And then you have to ask, are they really Khazars? Which I,
right.
I
yeah.
My book.
Exactly. Yeah. And that, of course, goes back at least to Arthur Kastner's book, The 13th Tribe, where he documented that most people call themselves Ashkenazi Jews, which my father was, are actually descendants of the ancient Turkic people of Khazaria. And even Wikipedia has an article on Khazaria where they talk about how the entire land was converted by a royal decree to Judaism in the 8th century, I believe it was. So even Wikipedia acknowledges that. And so people coming from that land are not the descendants of Abraham with some kind of covenant right to take the land away from other people. They don't have it under biblical terms, but even under genetic terms, they don't have it, as you point out, if they're not blood related to Abraham. So even on that false pretext, you can't make a case for it.
You also talk in the book about, and this is kind of funny, about All in the Family.
Oh, well, and that's in the chapter on the Golden Age of Television, how it degraded afterwards. And you know what happened with All in the Family? It came out in 1971. And I remember the first episode, my sister said to me, because I was a hippie type at the time, said, "You got to watch this show. It's very funny." And when the show began, you know, Archie was the conservative, and he had the liberal son-in-law, and they trade insults, and it was kind of like 50-50. But as a show, you know how they boil the frog? Eventually, the son-in-law started winning all the arguments, and Archie started looking like a buffoon. And he had all, you know, he'd say things sort of mimicking what conservatives say, or the Christian right might say, but he'd always be wrong, and Archie would learn, you know. Far from the lessons that Beaver would learn in the 50s, Archie would learn that his conservatism was wrong, you know, and he was just made out to be this bigot, this stereotype, this straw man. And I lost interest in the show very quickly. But yeah, that was a big change. That was when TV started to get very politicized, because up until then, it had not really been taking sides politically, particularly. But with that show, it sort of started a new era.
Right. Yeah.
Did you have any impressions of that show that you wanted to share?
No, but I excuse me. I thought it was really well, I agree with you. He looked like such a buffoon, and he was obviously the way that he treated his wife was it was funny, but as I mentioned, I didn't watch a lot of television, but yeah, you're right. That's when they started politicizing things. And you go back to the boiling of the frog scenario. And all this happened just incrementally so that people really didn't notice the big change.
Yeah, and what people don't understand is that our history has unfolded very deliberately, according to a very deliberate plan, and people think it's just chance or, you know, that somehow popularity of TV shows decides what's on TV, just like supposedly our presidential nominees are decided by the power of the people, right? But that
it's, yes, sure.
The TV is in like politics. It's not really democratic. The democracy angle is a sham.
Recently, I understand when we were talking about Gregory Peck that they have decided to withdraw certain books from the schools, like To Kill a Mockingbird, and which was a great book, and it was a great movie. I saw it just recently. It was on Turner, but I think it was. And so they're withdrawing things that actually teach moral values, because they might have some little mention of something that might be considered inappropriate. And they're taking down statues. They recently took down the statue of the individual, a woman, who sang the Star Spangled Banner. Was Kate Smith? Was it Kate Smith who sang the Star Spangled
Banner? I think so.
And she had a statue, and they used to play her rendition of that song, and because she had said something that was maybe negative or implied something that was negative or racist or something, and so they're changing history simply by the removal of statues and architecture. And what else are they going to take down? I know that they do this frequently and always. When the United States invades a country, the first thing that they do is destroy the culture so that people will forget who they are. And we think, oh yeah, look what they're doing in that country. They're destroying the culture. When in fact it's happened and is happening and will continue to happen in our own country. And yet, because we're living here, perhaps we simply do not recognize it unless somebody points it out.
Yeah, you know, what it says in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, Deanna, Protocol 16.4 says, quote, "We shall erase from the memory of men all facts of previous centuries which are undesirable to us," end quote. And that immediately when Robert E. Lee's statue was being taken down in the South, I immediately thought of this that particular quote because it perfectly fits. And it's truly Orwellian. Truths are being flushed down Orwellian memory holes as if they never happened, and it's absolutely by design. History is not only being erased, but even also invented sometimes. Like, for example, I believe I'm not a believer in the government story of how they took out bin Laden in 2011 when Obama's pre-election ratings were at an all-time low, They waited and politely waited to do it till the day after Kate and William's wedding. Wasn't that nice? And then they threw bin Laden's body into the ocean within a day, so nobody could even verify that it happened. So then now, but now that incident is written in the history books as if it happened, and maybe it did, but I really, really, I don't believe it. But it appears that not only are they erasing history, they're creating history that never even happened.
Right. Well, Fox News talked about his death from kidney failure years before.
Right.
So people don't even remember from one week or one year to the next. He was already dead. Whose body did they throw into the ocean? Who knows? Amazing.
Well, I should, let's see, if we have about 15 minutes to go, including one break, I should probably just mention some of the things that my book, 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, goes into. Again, this is a companion book to Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which is a primer on the New World Order. The first chapter is on the Spanish-American War. And, Deanna, I wanted to write on that because I found that nobody in alt media had covered it. And I found it was really our first interventionist war, our first war fought allegedly for somebody else's freedom, democracy, in this case, the freedom of democracy of the people of Cuba. But what they're really after was Cuba's sugar, Cuba being the biggest sugar producer in the world at that time, along with several other motives of the war. The second chapter is on the Lusitania and all the deceptions that dragged us into World War One and what that war is about. Chapter three, we did cover today, the Hindenburg. Chapter four is an in-depth look at Pearl Harbor, which, as you know, was provoked. The fleet was deliberately put in Pearl Harbor by Roosevelt against all naval advice, making it an easy target. And we knew about the attack in advance through decoded Japanese intercepts, but did not share that information with our commanders in Hawaii. And there was a major cover-up. And I've been writing on the Pearl Harbor false flag, by the way, since 1986. That's when I wrote my first cover story for the New American Magazine on that. Then the fifth chapter is on the Korean War, how there was just a crazy war that was completely artificially orchestrated, everything from inviting the Russians to occupy North Korea, where Stalin put Kim Il-sung in charge, all the craziness of the war, that the Soviets not vetoing the Korean War, which they could have done and protected Kim Il-sung's operation when he invaded the South, the restraining of General MacArthur, the elimination of congressional authority to declare war, because Harry Truman didn't even consult Congress when he sent troops to Korea, claiming it was just a UN police action. He said he didn't need congressional authority.
And that set a precedent.
Yes, it set a precedent. We have not had a declaration of war since Pearl Harbor. And then the subsequent chapters, 7 and 8, we've already talked about the mystery of the Best Picture Oscar and the Nakba and the Golden Age of Television. Chapter 9 is a subject that I had not touched for a long time, but it's on UFOs and aliens and what I believe they really mean. And that's after some research into particularly the works of L.A. Marzulli, who's done a lot of work on the spiritual dimensions of these aliens that I believe are fallen angels. But there's quite a bit more to it. Chapter 10 is on Christian Zionism. Chapter 11 brings us up to date. It's an interview with a Syrian Christian doctor on what's really happening in Syria today. And I included that chapter because it had a tremendous response when I published it online. It had 6,000 Facebook shares very rapidly, so I felt that should be included. Chapter 12 is something I did not include at all in Truth is a Lonely Warrior. It's on wireless dangers, and it's an interview with Cece Doucette, who up here in Massachusetts, she is the top wireless educator. She's been instrumental in getting several bills into the Massachusetts legislature to protect our children up here. But we talk, I'm not an expert on wireless, but she is a full-time wireless educator. And so we talk in this interview about 5G, about smart meters, about how to protect your home from wireless dangers, how to protect your children. And the final chapter, I say for last because I think it's the hardest for one for people, a lot of American patriots, to swallow. But it's a secret to buried up at Lexington Green, which you and I did a full show on a few years ago.
Right.
I grew up in Lexington, Mass, and I used to walk by the Battle Green every day. This is where the shot
heard around the world
was fired. Mm-hmm. And that started the American Revolution. Very significant shot because it started the revolution that created America, the United States, which in turn has had probably more impact than any other nation in the world on the globe in the past two centuries. But what I discovered was it was not the British who fired the first shots, and nor was it the Lexington militia standing on the green that fired the first shots, but it's hidden Freemasons in concealed protected locations that fired the first shots to provoke the British into shooting so that the message could be spread that the British started an unprovoked massacre in Lexington and start the revolution going. Now, it's not a message that appeals to American patriots very much, so I do begin the chapter acknowledging the contributions to our freedom of American patriots. I don't want to people to take this the wrong way and feel that I've written this out of unpatriotism, but I've written it out of dedication to the truth. And unfortunately, the truth is that most revolutions are not fought for Christian principles. Most revolutions have the backing of secret societies, which is no less true for the Freemasons and the American Revolution, which, by the way, is why I'm convinced is why the Freemasons have their national headquarters for their northern jurisdiction in the little town of Lexington, and they have their Lexington Lodge right on the edge of Lexington Green.
Wow. Didn't know that. All righty. We will be right back after a three-minute commercial.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
All righty, we are back with our first guest today, and that is James Perloff, and we were talking about Lexington and what really happened. And I remember that program that we did, and it's been several years, and it was, I think that, it was quite an interesting program.
Well, I think I'm the only person who's ever actually vetted the Battle of Lexington as a false flag. There are a couple of authors going back many, many decades who suggested that possibility, but they didn't devote more than a paragraph to it. I grew up in the town, and when I took my son on a tour of Lexington and started hearing the tour guides talk, as a veteran alt-media writer, I started saying, you know, that story doesn't sound like it would have happened that way. It doesn't sound right. And so I started to really investigate the original documents closely, and found that the picture was not quite as romantic as it's been painted.
Right. And of course, as you say, they always do romanticize things to make things more acceptable. And you also of course, mentioned the Boston Tea Party, and which all school children have heard about, but not the correct version of what it was. And you talk about the Continental Congress, and so it's quite a lengthy chapter. And I do remember that program, and
I remember some negative reaction we got to it. That was the first show I ever did on that. I think I've only done a couple other ones where we covered that in depth. But to me, again, growing up in that town and going by that green every day, it was a subject that was close to my heart personally, and especially putting it together with my own knowledge of the history of false flags and war deceptions and how they work. You start to look at the war propaganda and the fact that they said, originally said in the propaganda broadsheets of the day that the no shots were fired by the Americans at all, not even in retaliation. It wasn't until 50 years later when the town of Concord, neighboring town of Concord, wanted to take credit for firing the shots around the world, that the upset citizens of Lexington insisted they had fired the shot. And then the story began to change, and then the truth started to emerge, you know. Mm-hmm. But it is an interesting read. And I've tried to get as much documentation and detail to it and as much acknowledgement of my appreciation of the freedoms that the Bill of Rights gives us, so people do not think that I've done this out of some sort of unpatriotic motive.
Oh, no. I think anybody that reads your work would not even suggest such a thing. It is a lengthy chapter, but it's very well documented. So I think your book is very, very interesting. And I think people should buy it and read it. And I really appreciate you. You have incorporated history as well as current issues that we should all be concerned about, with the issue about 5G and Wi-Fi and what people can do about it, and the smart meters, which have been a big issue in the community that I live in and in the adjacent community. And people are so interested in having a fast internet and in having the technology that they don't stop to question whether it's harmful or not, which I think is pretty foolhardy.
Yeah. As you may know, Deanna, not a single safety test has been done on 5G, which is about 25 times stronger than the current Wi-Fi, which is already documented to have caused lowered sperm counts, DNA damage, cancer, and many other problems. And other countries are taking action. Belgium is refusing 5G. France won't allow children to bring cell phones to school. India has reduced Wi-Fi electromagnetic exposure by 90% below our levels. But it's time for Americans to wake up.
Yes, and stop just wanting stuff to make that they think makes their life easier.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
The book, again, is 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw.
Great. Thank you for throwing that in. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you. God bless you, Deanna. Thank you for all the work you're doing for 9 years, as you said now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And bless you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Stay with us, and we'll be back shortly.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This